I certainly concur with Bill's prayer in giving God thanks for the opportunity to be here, for the people who are gathered here this morning. I think sometimes what it would be like to try to be a Christian in the Houston area if you were by yourself. You could, but it wouldn't be as easy. So we're glad that you're here and gathered together this study, and later together we sing praise and pray together and remember our Lord's death together. Okay. If you picked up copies of the lesson, you'll note that there's the title page, and then there were two pages skipped. Well, I put the part of the table of contents out now. That's page two. You'll see there's still a page skipped because there's going to be some more of the table of contents as we move along through the class. And then page four, that's the one that we're doing today. We're going to try to make one class per page. Make it simple. We try to keep the questions minimal, 7 to 10 questions, so it will not be difficult for you to do the lesson between Sunday and Wednesday or Wednesday and Sunday. So we're looking at our first lesson today, and we're going to start our study in Matthew chapter 22 and verse 30. I've got verse 39. That's the verse we'll look at in a moment. But I want to back up to verse 36. Verse 36. A man asked Jesus, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" You know, you can look at my Bible here. It's kind of thick. I don't know how thick yours is. And I'm right now on page 1598. Go all the way to the end. It's over 2,000 pages in this particular Bible. And so if somebody asks you, here's a book with multiple commands, many, many, many. What's the biggest one? What's the first one? What's the most important one? Well, would that be a challenge? And yet that's what he asked. What's the first commandment? And so Jesus tells him, as you see here in verse 37, without any hesitation, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. So he emphasizes that this is the great and foremost commandment. Okay, second question. What's the second greatest? Does that make it any easier? Remember, number two. And so here Jesus says the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Note the man didn't ask about that, but Jesus thought it important to join that with the first one. They are indeed hinged together. You say, well, what about all the other commandments? Well, then Jesus dealt with that in verse 40. On these two commandments depend or hang the whole law and the prophets. Every other commandment is based on these two. And that evidently is the reason Jesus says these are the two foremost commandments. So let's look at that second one, the second greatest commandment. If that's the second greatest commandment from our God, it's certainly worthy of our attention. But it's more than that. We need to know what it means to love your neighbor as yourself. Easy to say, but what does it mean? Now, this statement, as you see on your lesson, is found in Leviticus 19:18. We're not going to read that right now. That's going to be one of our classes. We're going to look at the context of Leviticus 19. It's very enlightening. But it's also quoted 7 times in the New Testament, 4 in the Gospels. Matthew 19:9, when a rich young ruler came to Jesus, and Jesus again referred to this commandment. And then here in Matthew 22 and Mark 12, where the scribe or a lawyer questioned Jesus, he referred to the first and second greatest commandment. And then in Luke 10:27, the second greatest commandment. The first one is also referred to earlier in the text. But the focus of that whole discussion is that second greatest commandment. And you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Luke chapter 10, verse 27. So in the Gospels, we have it quoted these 4 times. And then you have Paul making mention of it, one of our verses for study today, which we'll look at in a moment, and also in both in Romans 13:9 and Galatians 5:14. And then another one of the texts that we'll look at today, James chapter 3, verse 8. While that's seven times, understand that while that particular phraseology is not used, the idea is found throughout the Bible. Obviously, that's the case if every other commandment is based on these two. You would expect that to be the case. So don't be deceived by the fact, well, I don't see that particular phrase, therefore that's not in this context. Indeed, the things that are stated in that context will grow out of one or two, number one or number two of the commandments. So, you'll note this, the second greatest commandment does not command us to love ourselves. In fact, unless I'm missing it, I don't know of any commandment to love ourselves. And yet the title of our study is As You Love Yourself. It's assumed that you do. Love your neighbor as. And you'll note in the title page of your class, I put brackets around as you love. In the second part of the commandment, when Jesus quoted it here, he didn't put that in, but that's implied. As you love yourself. And so that is the foundational concept behind love your neighbor, upon which that is built. That being the case, it's so important then that we understand it. If we don't understand it, it undermines our ability to practice the second greatest commandment. And I think we'll see as we go through this, through our study, that understanding this second greatest commandment and what it's based on, the as you love yourself, is vital to a healthy attitude toward ourself and toward our neighbor. Certainly, if the love for neighbor is based upon love for self, it's important that I understand what that means. So, we ask this question on the lesson. As in these texts is an adverb, and we know what an adverb does. It modifies an adjective or a verb or another adverb. And so, love your neighbor as yourself. So, what does the word as modify?
Love.
That's right. Love is a verb. Love as, in this manner, as you love yourself. So, love of neighbor, we'll see, is not simply something that just naturally occurs. I say, I like that guy. You may not like him at all. That's not this love. But you still have to love him. How? As yourself. So as tells you the manner in which you're to love. Well, does that help me any? Let's suppose you were working in a sports team and the coach said, I want you to train this new fella as a runner. Train him as a runner. Okay. What do you do? How do you go about training him as a runner? Well, then suppose the coach said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to get the guy up early every morning. I want you to have him run a 5K. I want you to have this guy in the gym working out. I want you to have this guy controlling his diet, what he eats. Does that tell you what as a runner means? It does, doesn't it? Here are some specifics that help define the manner as a runner. Now, when we look at love your neighbor as yourself, the same thing is true. If we can find out what this love is about, then we understand, if we can understand as yourself, we can understand how to love a neighbor. Just like if I understand as a runner, I know what I do to train this guy. And if I understand what it means to love myself, I understand better about loving neighbor. But we're actually looking kind of at the reverse. Love your neighbor as yourself. And so we're going to be looking at what's entailed in this as yourself. All right, now, question, pretty simple here. Based on the phrase itself, don't go out of the verse, how are we to love a neighbor? I've only said it 10 times. As we love ourselves, that's right. And so, very important then that we understand that. Now, let me go to James 2, because I got a question tied to this. So let me go to James 2. Let's go to James 2:8. Thought about putting that in here, but let me go ahead and go to James chapter 2. Now, James chapter 2, verse 8, and I've just put one verse out of these contexts that focuses on the point we make, but we encourage you each time you turn to these verses to read the context. You notice I have verses 1 through 13 there. You may be familiar with the context where they were showing partiality in their assemblies to the rich man. And so we ask the question based on James chapter 2, verse 8. Note, he says, if, however, you're fulfilling the royal law according to the scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, you're doing well. So he quotes that second greatest commandment. In the context, this love that he's talking about is not influenced by what two opposites, two things that are opposite, does not influence loving your neighbor in this context. What are they? Poverty and wealth. Good. I'm glad somebody understood my question. Good. That's it. Poverty and wealth has nothing to do with loving your neighbor in this text. Now, note in verse 6, loving your neighbor is put in opposition to what? Verse 6. If you don't love your neighbor, what, instead of loving their neighbor, what were they doing? Verse 6.
Dishonor.
Dishonor. So, clearly, love has something to do with honoring. And so, we ask you a question. What are some synonyms of honor?
Respect.
Esteem. So if I wanted to use a synonym for love yourself, instead of self-love, I could say what? Self-esteem or self-honor. Now, that can be a tricky field when we start talking about self-esteem because there's a, I guess you'd call it a synonym. It's listed in synonyms in the dictionary. But it's really a different word, a different concept. That's the word selfishness. Now, when I'm talking about self-esteem in this lesson, I'm talking about viewing ourselves as having a value and esteeming ourselves with that value, regardless of whether, like in this particular context, you have a lot of money or you don't have a lot of money. Whether you have a great job with people under you or whether you're the trash collector. Whether you've got a college degree or whether you've had trouble finishing high school. It has nothing to do with the social standards that often are tied to men's esteem of their neighbors. And sometimes their self-esteem. You know, I don't have a big education. He does, so. And then we start to look down on ourselves. Or those kind of things. I don't have a big house and a big car. No, that means nothing about this kind of esteem. Now, if you're a banker, that's not the context here. That's why I said in the context. If you're a banker and this guy walks in with these old clothes, and another guy walks in, he drove up in a Mercedes and he's got a nice suit on, and both of them want a loan, are you going to show partiality? Yeah, you might in this case. But that's not having to do with the faith here, this context. See, it had nothing to do as far as our relationship to one another's brethren. It had nothing to do with the way God looks at us. And so that's very important. Now, the banker may look at us different based on our our wealth or the kind of car we drive, but not our God in heaven. And that's not the way we should look at one another. So let's not confuse these two words, self-esteem and selfishness. Now, self-esteem can help avoid jealousy. If this poor man in this context has a healthy self-respect, is he going to feel bad toward the wealthy man?
No.
Is he going to want to hurt him? Take away his wealth? No. If, regardless of wealth, he has a healthy self-esteem, it helps shut the door to jealousy. Jealousy is that stirring of the emotions towards someone because they have something that you want. And because you don't have it, you may say bad things about them. You may do bad things to them. You may demean them in some way. But I don't care if the guy's got $10 million and I don't even have a savings. I'm still just as important, just as valuable in the eyes of my God and should be in the eyes of right-thinking people as the fellow that's got all that money. And so it can shut the door on jealousy. Love your neighbor as yourself. Okay, so talking about self-honor, self-esteem. Let's look at Luke chapter 10. Yes, sir.
Would this kind of be related to the concept of people should not be committing suicide because God created them, they have a soul given to them by God, and they should believe that and honor that?
Good comment that Ennis makes, and we're going to deal with that very concept. I think it's a very perceptive comment that this has a bearing on committing suicide because we should have that self-esteem, that self-honor. Maybe we made a mess of our lives. We'll talk more about that later. Maybe we made a mess of our finances, but that is not what self-esteem is based on. We'll talk about what it's based on in another lesson. A good point that Ennis makes, and people commit suicide when they have lost that self-valuing or self-esteem. So good comment, good observation. All right, Luke chapter 10. Now again, I put the context 25 through 37. We're not going to read all those verses. I hope in your preparation for class you did, or you're familiar enough with it that you know what the context is. So our question, verse 27, you see here about the man asked 26, what to do to inherit eternal life. And Jesus quotes these two commandments again. And so let me ask you a question on this text, but a little bit aside. If a person kept these two commandments perfectly, would Jesus' ministry be needed? No, wouldn't be. Jesus came because people fail to keep these. Jesus didn't come to bring these commandments. They're already in place. They're universal. They're for all men of all times. And it's the failure to love God first and foremost and love our neighbors ourselves that tells us we need a ransom. We need an atonement. We need Christ. And so it's this very failure to recognize one's guilt that was one of the problems with the Jewish leaders, the Pharisees, and this particular lawyer, as you see, because it says, and once Jesus gave him that answer, verse 28, do this and you'll live, the man wishing to justify himself. He did not want to have that sense of guilt to admit, I've not always loved God and loved my neighbors. I should. And so he asked the question, well, who is my neighbor? And so that's the question he asked. Now, then you have the story that we're familiar with about the priest and the Levite and the Samaritan. And so I asked the question, what was lacking in the attitude of the priest and the Levite toward the man who was robbed, but present in the attitude of the Samaritan, causing him to show mercy to the man? And I ask you to choose one or more words. I gave you several options here. Of those words, which ones would describe the attitude the Samaritan had, but the priest and Levite did not? That's not in those six words.
Respect.
Respect.
Esteem
and honor. Right? And so, you're right, Herb, that that's what he failed, to love his neighbor. But I wanted you to see that it's not a matter of emotional, that our affection, that the priest and Levi said, I just don't like that guy. It's not that. And it's not that the Samaritan came along and said, boy, I tell you what, I've done a lot of things with this fellow. He's a great friend of mine. I'm going to help him out. Don't know his name, don't know, but he is a neighbor. That is a fellow man. He has value. And so the Samaritan esteemed, honored, valued this man. He's worthy of his putting his own self at risk, because obviously if these robbers assaulted this man, they might assault him, expending his effort and his finances to help this guy. And so when we esteem people properly, then it affects what we will do for people and our attitude toward them. So, I've got this question. What is this attitude not based on? And what, these words you chose, esteem, honor, value, or respect, what are they based on? What are they not based on? Sir?
I say, well, they're not based on romance and emotions.
Okay, not based on romance or emotions. Are they based on being of the same race? Not based on money.
Not based on
expecting some kind of remuneration.
Not based on race.
Not based on race.
Not based on
liking. So oftentimes when we esteem somebody, what do we look at? Well, let's see, they got the same color skin, or they went to the same college I did, or, they associate my social circle.
Not even based on knowing the guy.
That's right, not even based on knowing the guy. It's based on what?
He's created in the image of God.
What?
He's created in the image of God.
You're right, but that's not in this text. You're right. I'm getting to that. What does he say in the text? Based on what?
Their neighbor.
Neighbor. But that, Lil's exactly right. That's what it is. Being made in the image of God. We're going to get to that lesson. She's ahead of me, but she's right. So that's good. And so let me just, kind of a side question. If love your neighbor implies I ought to be concerned about his physical needs, when he's been robbed and stripped and beaten, what about his spiritual needs?
More so.
How many of our neighbors have been robbed, stripped, and beaten spiritually by the false teaching they've been subjected to, by the terrible examples, by the terrible experiences they've had in religion? And so if our concern for our neighbor when he's robbed, stripped, and beaten physically demands we try to take some action. Now, obviously, in a spiritual realm, it's not always well received. That's the difference. This guy would welcome help, but people who have been robbed spiritually don't even realize that sometimes don't want you trying to help them, and that is a big difference. But be that as it may, something to think about. Now, if what the Samaritan did is an expression of the second greatest commandment, Jesus said it is, love your neighbor as yourself, what does that imply about attitude towards self? Does it not imply what?
You have to love yourself.
Okay. And that love implies you have compassion for yourself, doesn't it? You have concern for your well-being. That's not selfishness. If you had no concern for your well-being, and it's love your neighbor as yourself, tough. But if you have self-compassion, you want to be fed and clothed and cared for, love your neighbor as yourself. So having those desires is not selfishness, but in fact is the basis of our attitude and action toward our neighbor. All right, look at Romans chapter 13, verse 9. Again, the context, 8 through 10. And so, you'll note again in verse 8, it talks about loving your neighbors, fulfill the law, and he actually quotes the verse that we're looking at in this lesson, the second greatest commandment in verse 9, you shall love your neighbors yourself. Now, Paul lists several specific actions this kind of love prohibits, and says these specific things are summed up by what commandment? That's so easy, you don't know what I'm asking. Love your neighbor as yourself. That's right. So the specific things he talks about, he lists them here. You shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. If there's any other commandment, like you shall not bear false witness or honor your father and mother, whatever it may be, he says they're all summed up in. So that being the case, you don't, in fact, I asked this question, I thought I did. What, when you sum up these things, what does it prohibit according to verse 10? You do no wrong to a neighbor. Some versions say no ill. Some versions say no harm. So, if you love your neighbor as yourself, what's implied about self? You do good, you don't hurt yourself. As Andy's pointed out, you don't jump off the bridge. You don't take an overdose. You don't cut your wrist. If you do that to yourself, what would keep you from doing it to a neighbor? Love your neighbor as yourself. Now, Jesus didn't command you to do that. It's just implied in the second greatest commandment. And so you take the, you don't commit adultery because it'll hurt your neighbor. Love your neighbor as yourself. What will that do to yourself? It's going to hurt you.
Every sin affects you or your neighbor.
That's right. Good point that Nadine made. Every sin affects you or your neighbor. And so you have, you got the idea of adultery. It's your self-respect for your own morality. You're not to murder. Self-respect for human life and dignity. You shall not steal. Self-respect for the right of ownership. I have the right to own stuff. That's mine. Is that selfishness? No, it's not self, ma'am.
Could be.
If selfishness is when you let that self-esteem have a disregard for how it hurts others. Now, that's selfishness. And we're going to talk about one of the lessons will be the wrong love of self. And we'll talk some more about that when we talk about that. But just the right to own property. What did Peter tell Ananias? While it remained what?
Yours.
It was yours. It remained your own. Who controlled it?
You.
You do. It's under your control. And so, there's nothing wrong or bad in saying, I have the right to have something, and that's my property. And then he says, you shall not covet. The idea of respecting the accomplishments of others. And that implies respecting your own accomplishments and possessions and where you've reached life. And so, love your neighbor as yourself. And again, it would help shut the door on jealousy, by the way, see? So, as we talked about in a previous comment. Okay, so, you can see how these applications of these verses will affect this idea of understanding what's involved in this second greatest commandment. And so, when we talk about committing adultery, we may say, well, the reason adultery is wrong is because God forbade it. Well, that's not a wrong answer. But that's not what he's appealing to here. There's something else he's appealing to. Adultery is wrong because why? It hurts your neighbor.
And yourself.
That's right. Every law God made is that way. In our Sunday night lesson last week, I think is when I referred to it, we were talking about discipline and the failure to discipline. And we referred to a verse in Deuteronomy. Everybody remembers the chapter and verse, right? Look at Deuteronomy 10:13. Deuteronomy chapter 10 and verse 13. Now, if you were to go through Deuteronomy and look for word threads, those of you who are familiar with Deuteronomy, what would be one of the most dominant word threads?
Keep the Lord's commandments.
Keep the Lord's commandments. That's right. Commandments, laws, statutes, judgments. Keep those, observe those, obey those. All the way through. This was his sermon to the people as preparing them to enter the land. You think, boy, that seemed like a heavy burden. What is this kind of God making all these laws? Well, here's the answer, verse 13. He said, I want you to keep the Lord's commandments and his statutes, which I'm commanding you today. Why?
For your good.
For your good. And so the same is true with these things that Paul talks about. Adultery, murder, steal, covet. As Nadine has pointed out, it's for your good. Yes, it hurts your neighbor, but to practice these things hurts you. And so every law God gave is for our good. Okay, so let's look at Galatians chapter 5. If you have a thought or comment, feel free to either raise your hand or speak up. Yes, sir.
So the devil's lie is that you do what you want to do for your good. It's what you want to do. And that's the devil's lie. It's completely opposite of what God intended. The commandments are for your good. People say, well, I'll just do what I want to do because I want to satisfy myself and do it for my good. Well, it's just the opposite.
Okay, everybody hear Rocky? Rocky said the devil's lie is you do what you want. That's for your good. Did he make that argument? Did he ever make that argument?
Yes.
Where? Garden of Eden. Genesis 3. So, in Genesis chapter 3, God had told the woman, don't eat of the tree. And so Satan says, verse 5, God knows in the day you eat from it, your eyes will be opened. You'll be like God, knowing good and evil. When the woman saw the tree was good for food, a delight to the eyes, and desirable. Good, delight, desirable. That's what I want to do. And now we've got people who are sick and dying. Yes, sir.
Most recently, in our society, we've seen the same thing happen when people were wearing these T-shirts that says, just do it. That is, you know, implying that with no regard as to whether it's right or wrong, and God likes it, he doesn't like it.
Unfortunately, that's right. And his comment about the shirt, just do it, no regard for God or a moral norm. But that's the society in which we live, and that's why it's so refreshing on Sundays and Wednesdays to assemble with people that do not subscribe to that kind of norm. What a blessing and a privilege it is that God has given us in the local church. And so be ever thankful in your prayers that you have the brethren you do, that you can meet with and worship with, that you may only see them a couple of times a week, but you know they're trying to live for Christ throughout the week, and that's the foundation of their decisions. All right, look at Galatians chapter 5 and verse 14. Here's another one of those places in the New Testament where this law is quoted. Well, the whole law is fulfilled in one word, very similar to what Paul wrote in Romans 13. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Now, our question is, what will this love keep one from doing? Verse 15.
Biting and devouring
one another. Always at one another's throats. Always trying to undermine. Always trying to stir up a fight. Look down at verse 26. Let us not become boastful, challenging one another, envying one another. And sometimes what will destroy brethren is not doctrinal error. This whole book is doctrinal error. It has to do with doctrinal, very important doctrinal error. But sometimes it's not the doctrine itself. It's the personal attitudes that brethren have toward one another, especially if there are doctrinal differences. And so Paul turns from the doctrinal aspect, in the, which he's been dealing with throughout the book, to these attitudes. And if we're not careful when we differ doctrinally, it can turn to personal attack rather than attack upon what somebody actually is espousing or trying to defend. And so you see that very thing happen back in verse 13. You are called for freedom, brethren. Only do not turn your freedom into an opportunity for the flesh, but through love, do what? Serve. Serve one another. And he said it's summed up in this, you shall not, you shouldn't bite and devour. Now, if this love for your neighbor, what's it based on again? For yourself. So what does that imply about yourself?
Just love yourself.
Huh?
Just love yourself.
True. And specifically in this text.
Serve yourself.
What?
You mean serve yourself? Is that what
you're getting? Well, that's a good, my question's not clear. He said, don't bite and devour your neighbor. So what does that imply about yourself? You don't bite and devour yourself. You ever see people that's always putting themselves down, always criticizing themselves? Is there any reason to criticize ourselves? Yes. Yeah, we make so many mistakes. We sin. But by the grace of God, we've been lifted up to fellowship with God. And I'll tell you what, the love of God says, in spite of all those mistakes, He loves us. He esteems us. He sent His Son for us to die for us. So to dwell on that, just continually gnaw at oneself and bite and devour and criticize, and that's not healthy. It's not good.
Hey, Steve.
Yes, sir?
It's not even healthy doing it, even in a joking manner.
Okay. Well, I may be guilty of that one. I don't know. As long as there's no serious... What do you mean, Herb? I need some clarification in a joking matter.
In other words,
if I say I'm ugly, that's not good? Oh, I know. You agree with that. That's not joking. That's the deal. Maybe I better use another illustration. What do you have in mind?
In other words, you know, as when you sarcasm, being, you know, making fun of something that's really not made, need to be made fun of, that that person may take it offense of. So you sarcasm and make a joke of something that, that knowing that that's offensive to that person. So you wouldn't want to do that either.
Yeah, if it was really something that bothered you. Yeah, I agree. If it was something, but a lot of times we make fun of ourselves, it doesn't bother us. And if it is that kind of thing, like Herb says, and it's going to get us down and in a state of despair, we better quit it. So I see what you're driving at, Herb. Thank you. Okay, so I hope that at least in this particular lesson we've seen that love your neighbor as yourself says something about what this whole class is going to be about. What is involved in as yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. This next lesson is also going to deal with the nature of this loving your neighbor as yourself. And I think you'll find it interesting as we go to Leviticus 19 in that next lesson and look at that context particularly. And then we have a couple other verses that we'll look at as well. So if the Lord is willing, come back Wednesday night and we'll continue this study and expand upon it with what the Holy Spirit has given us. Thank you for your excellent comments this morning and your good attention.